Hello and welcome to our weekly podcast of Who's Here in the Hamptons. I'm Dan Rettiner, your host, broadcasting from my home in the Hamptons, where I have lived for over 55 years. I've written a dozen books about this glorious place, and I've seen it grow through the years from small tourist towns, quaint fishing villages, and a summer playground for high society, to what it is today, a world-class resort for celebrities, artists, musicians, authors, and billionaires. In my podcast, I will bring you interviews with not only these people, but also prominent local people who have helped shape the Hamptons. Welcome to Dan's Talks. My guest this morning is Mia Sertic, the director of the Montauk Historical Society. And she's announcing a new upcoming event that's probably very important to in a lot of ways. Tell us a bit about it.
Well, a couple of years ago, the town of East Hampton purchased the Carl Fisher House, which was the house that Carl Fisher built for himself here in Montauk in the 1920s. And the town of East Hampton purchased it with community preservation funds.
Explain who he was to most people don't know the name.
Carl Fisher was an amazing developer and idea guy who, among other things, built the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, saw a mangrove swamp in Florida and turned it into Miami Beach, and was involved in building the Lincoln Highway, which is the first, you know, coast-to-coast highway in the country, and also the Dixie Highway, which was north-south. So he was an incredibly accomplished guy when he happened upon Montauk in 1925 and thought it would be a great place for a summer resort. So, sort of like the mirror image of Miami. So Miami in the winter, Miami Beach in the winter, Montauk Beach in the summer was his.
There were practically no buildings in Montauk at the time. It was pretty much a vacant land.
It was fairly uninhabited. The native people had been driven off the previous century. And there were seven sister houses were here that had been Arthur Benson's brainchild. And you know, there was first house, second house. Actually, by 1925, there was only second house, third house, lighthouse, and I think a few scattered little fishing houses in the fishing village near Duryea, what's now Duryea's. So yeah, it was pretty uninhabited. And he bought almost the entire thing to create this extremely ambitious development. And in the course of that, he actually created all these subdivisions. And one of the subdivisions ended up 40 years later becoming Culloden Shores, which is the Leisurama development you see behind me here.
The roads were all built by him to be developments. It might have been 50 or 100,000 people here, and none of it got built practically, except a few things. So here we go. What happened then back in the 50s, 60s?
So the story of Leisurama really started in 1959 at the American Exhibition in Moscow. There was a little bit of rapprochement between the USSR and the United States. So there was a desire for some cultural exchange, sort of maybe just warming up the Cold War a little bit. And so the Russians came to the New York Coliseum, and they mounted a very impressive exhibition about their space race. They were way ahead of us at that time, and agriculture and music and art. And the following month, we sent a delegation to Moscow to do an American exhibition. Of course, we were behind in the space race. So they decided to focus on what we were really good at, which was consumer goods, capitalist lifestyle. One of the things that they did was they built what was called a typical American house. And this was supposed to be a house that was accessible to an average middle-class American family. And they hired a guy named Herbert Sadkin to do that. He had a company called Allstate Properties, and he had built a house that fit the bill in Comac. He decided to pretty much recreate it in Moscow. So he just wanted to zhuzh it up a little bit. So he hired Raymond Loewy, the famous industrial designer, and Raymond Loewy's in-house architect, Andrew Geller, just to snazz it up a little bit. And he hired somebody who had become quite famous, who at that time was a PR guy named William Sapphire, to help promote it. And they went to Moscow, and they actually built this house. They built a house based on a house in Comac. They split it in two so that people could walk through the entire thing. And it got the name Splitnik as a sort of takeoff on Sputnik. And it was hugely, hugely popular. There were millions of people went to see this house. It seemed very, very, very luxurious and very, very modern. And it was, in fact, based on a house that cost $13,000. So at that time, it was, you know, quite accessible to the average middle-class people in
London. That house behind you is a picture in Montauk of that same design.
I'm sorry, this is a Leisurama house. It's actually my Leisurama house.
Yes, but it was the same house as was in Montauk.
It was based on that. The one in Montauk is a little bit smaller than what they had. It was only two bedrooms and one and a half baths. The one in Comac was actually, I think, a three-bedroom, two-bath house. But the kitchen was exactly the same. And the kitchen was actually the heart of the matter. And that's the reason this all became famous, because then Vice President Richard Nixon and then Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev ended up standing in that kitchen and having what later became known as the kitchen debate, in which they were really sort of pitting communism versus capitalism. And Khrushchev and most of the Russians were convinced that this all-electric, General Electric kitchen on display was something that was undoubtedly beyond the reach of most Russians, of most Americans, rather, and that this was all sort of propaganda. And in fact, actually, the kitchen was, you know, pretty usable. Anyway, Nixon got a big boost from that. He came off as a masterful debater with Khrushchev. He seems to have made his point. The kitchen became famous, and Herbert Sadkin had this new idea, which was, okay, maybe now I will design another house, another accessible house, but I'll go one step further. It'll be an accessible house for middle-class people to have a second home. And Montauk was the place for that. So that was the birth of Leisurama. And then he came to Montauk, and working with Frank Tuma and Ed Pospisil, who were local realtors at the time, they took this map that Carl Fisher had drawn, or Carl Fisher's guys had drawn back in the 1920s. And this whole section of land between the dock area and Culloden Point had been envisaged as a sort of higher density, small house area on the Sound side. And they just took a section of it, and that's what they converted that into Culloden Shores. Eventually, they built about 200 houses, and you had three different models of houses. You could choose your plot of land. You could choose your color scheme. There were three color schemes. Absolutely everything was included in the house, the land.
And each house was virtually the same as each other house.
There were these three different models, but otherwise they were the same, with the exception of the color of the furniture. They came fully furnished, down to the linens, cookware, tableware, toothbrushes, famously. Basically you came, you turned the key. I think Frank Tuma said, all you need is a groceries and a six pack, and you're ready to go.
Talk how Macy's got involved.
Well, Macy's was involved in the original house in 1959 in Russia. They had furnished that house in Moscow. And so they became part of the same team to create Leisurama. That was Sadkin, Raymond Loewy, Andrew Geller, and Macy's. And they all came together to create this house. Macy's did an unbelievable job marketing the house. And one of the most memorable aspects of their marketing was that they built the houses in various places so that people could actually walk through them, as they had in Russia, and actually seen what the houses were going to look like. So they had them at the World's Fair. They had them at Macy's Roosevelt Field. They had them on the plaza in Montauk. And they had them on the ninth floor in Macy's Herald Square. And so it drew people to Macy's out of curiosity. And you know, the story goes, there were quite a few impulse buys of people who went to Macy's to buy something different, and they ended up buying a house.
Well, what did it cost?
The small model, it was like a studio. It had a kitchen, living room, dining room, and a Murphy bedroom that was convertible to a den. So it was kind of, there was this bed that came down from the wall. That cost $12,900, including the land and all the furniture. The expanded convertible was the same house with two bedrooms and a half bath, and that was $3,000 more. So it was just under $16,000 more, a little bit more if you wanted a fireplace. And then there was this the third model, which was actually the one that was the most sort of designy. It had a roof, like the roof was kind of at an angle. That was intended to be a rental unit, and the idea didn't take off. So there were only about four or five of those ever built.
How many were built altogether? How many did they intend to build, and how many did they actually build?
I think they intended to build like 1,000. And they built around 200 in Culloden Shores in this one development near Culloden Point. There are other Leisuramas dotted all over Montauk, because that was also a possibility. If you had your own land, or if you preferred a different piece of land, you could just buy one of these houses. They were not prefabs, but you know, the guys knew how to build them quick. So so if there's a bunch of them on Fairview Avenue in Montauk. There are some in Hither Hills, Hither Woods area too.
And I remember this. I was, I guess, at that time about 30, 20, 25. And I remember going out to watch them build them. They mostly were college kids who were building them. It was like they built Levittown like that.
I think they got whoever they could find to build the houses, you know. And unfortunately, the houses were just, they ended up being more expensive for the developers than they had anticipated. Herbert Sadkin eventually had to declare bankruptcy. He did go on to develop other things in other places, but he lost his shirt on Lake Toronto.
But it must have been at the time, it was quite a sensation. I know, and a lot of people didn't like the idea. It looked like Levittown in Montauk, still there, but a lot of them have been added on. But the whole development, which is just a short 5-minute walk to the beach.
Yeah. I mean, it's less than that for me. I mean, we're just one block from the beach. I think what people objected to, and that includes the people who were original buyers, was that when they went to see the land, and people here who knew what it looked like, they were these beautiful rolling hills, of, you know, these beautiful wild rolling hills with little scrub oak trees and everything. And then they just flattened it. They, you know, they came in, they ripped everything out. And I remember as a small child coming to see our property as it had been staked out and thinking, oh, this is really very nice at all. And it really wasn't. I mean, if you look at the early pictures of Leisurama, everybody had a view because there were no trees and everything was flat. And you were just looking out at the water, which was nice. But, you know, little by little, this picture is probably maybe 1969, 1968, something like that. So it's, you know, you can see that.
You live in one and that's it right behind you.
That's the one I live in today, yeah. Yeah.
So what's happening? What's happening is now 50 years later, or how many years?
It's almost 60 years. It'll be 60 years next year. And, you know, interestingly, there's the mid-century modern architecture, which was sort of scoffed at for such a long time, has become really popular. People are reevaluating it. The Leisurama house was brilliantly designed. I mean, it was designed so cleverly. There isn't an inch of space that wasn't cleverly used. There was storage everywhere. It was really, really a brilliant design. And I think people are appreciating it more and more. So there was a spate when Leisuramas were being bought and knocked down, and these great big houses were being built in their place. And the lots are tend to be pretty small there. So it really changed the character of the neighborhood. But it feels now as though there's a return to the appreciation. And of course, they're so expensive now that to buy one and knock it down and build something is, you know, I mean, they're well over $1 million now. So,
well, I should point out, I happened to look out before this phone call, the cost of living then and now, you need to add a zero. So yeah. what was $16,000 then should be today $160,000.
Yeah, but it's actually 1.6 million.
I know. So that's all the fluff, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, the 160, you got a front door key, and inside was all the linen, all the everything.
So
that's all complete.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was the hook for people, because people who were starting to think, gee, it would be nice to have a little weekend place, a little summer place somewhere. You know, you think about, okay, well, I'm going to buy this house and then I have to furnish it. And this just, it just sealed the deal. You know, you didn't have anything to think about. Turnkey.
So you're having a showing or organizing what exactly is going to happen? When is this, in July, June?
Yeah, so we were extremely lucky to have been offered a house full of original Leisurama furniture from Macy's by the family of Florence Donahue, who lived a couple of blocks away from me up on Gull Road. And they gave the Montauk Historical Society all of the furniture from the house that they were selling. This is bedroom furniture, occasional tables, lamps, I mean, just tons and tons of stuff, tableware, glasses, flatware. They donated it to us. They were heartbroken to sell the house, but the original owner had died and there were a lot of heirs, and they decided to sell the house. And so we decided to do what they did in Macy's, basically. We're not quite going to build the house, but we're going to recreate rooms, the rooms of an original Leisurama in the Carl Fisher house in the Great Room. And so it's going to be an immersive exhibition. You're going to walk into 1965 when you come into that.
And where is when you said it's in the Fisher house, where is that? And how, it's a big home, I believe, on the golf.
Yes. It's near the golf course. The Carl Fisher house was the house he built for himself in Montauk in between like 1925 and 1927. For years, after it was sold by Carl Fisher's widow, it was sold to the Aiken family, and they had it for about 65 years before the town bought it as a community preservation property. And it is on, it's funny, it's, the address is 44 Foxborough Road. The entrance is actually on Glenmore. It's just before Glenmore. It's very, very strange. But anyway, it's if you take North Farragut off of Flamingo, if you turn right on North Farragut and you just stay straight on that road, you will come to the Carl Fisher House. It's about 9,500 square feet. There's also an annex that's about, I don't know, a couple thousand square feet that was garages and bedrooms. There are 7.5 acres of land.
Big house.
Big house. Big, beautiful, wonderful house. I'm in it right now.
Is the furniture going to occupy a room in that house, or are you going to build another house inside that house?
But we're not actually building another house, but we're actually building sort of like sets.
I see.
So you'll walk through the front door and you'll walk into a kitchen set. But sort of in the same way that Herbert Sadkin split the house so that the people could actually see it, you'll just sort of walk from little vignette room to another room. So you'll go from the kitchen to the dining room, to the living room, to the Murphy room, to the bedroom, to the bathroom.
When is it?
Yes, thank you. Our opening party is going to be on June 29th. We're opening the exhibition to the public on June 30th, and it's going to run through Labor Day. And details will be up on our website, which is MontaukHistoricalSociety.org.
A mouthful.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Well, thank you for being on the podcast. And this is going to be a very exciting thing to see. I remember at the time I was publishing the Montauk Pioneer newspaper, which was the precursor of Dan's papers, and I was in those houses at that time. And as I mentioned, I want to end by telling you a story about Levittown, because it's the same story. I befriended a guy named Charlie Vanderveer, who was an auctioneer and a farmer in Bridgehampton. And he was talking about how when he graduated high school, he went to try and get a job where his father was developing projects in Nassau County, was helping out with the family there. And one day he went down where they were building Levittown. He drove a motorcycle back in those days. And he was talking to one of the foremen and with his friend who had come with him. And all of a sudden there was a thud behind him. And they look, and this young man who had been up on the roof with roofing equipment had just fallen off the roof and was lying on the ground behind him. And they woke up and seemed to be all right, but the guy said, you got to take the day off. And he said, the foreman says, is there anybody here knows how to do some roofing? And then Charlie got the job for the rest of the day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a great story. But that's how things were back then. Everybody was building. Things were affordable. And here is this entire development, which you're going to be showing off for the summer. And thank you for coming on this. And I'll be seeing you then and before then, I think, too.
Thank you. I hope so. And I hope you'll be coming to our party on the 29th.
Sure. I'll put it down. I'll see you then.
Thanks a lot.
Okay. Bye-bye.